Living Chemical Child. Written by Jukebox Hound. Read by Opal Song. Fandoms: Final Fantasy VII, Full Metal Alchemist. Relationship: Sephiroth, Zack, Cloud. Rating: Light R. Warnings for alchemical torture, naturally, some sexuality, meandering thoughts on alchemy and philosophy, general unhappiness. Recorded for Something Incorporeal for ITBE 2017. Summary: It wasn't like Hojo had left clear instructions on how to reverse a sacrifice to the gate. Author's note: Though this is a crossover, the focus is on Sephiroth, Zack, and Cloud, who have their own situation entirely separate from the Elrics. Also, rather than being a proper story, this is just going to be a series of one-shots pertaining to the same plotline. The title comes from a passage in the book by Robert Allen Bartlett, Real Alchemy. Part 1. Terra Damnata. Noun: Damned Earth. Latin: The leftover distillate from the distillation process, which is considered devoid of any sulfurous or mercurial nature. This lack makes the physical matter inert and incapable of higher alchemical evolution. It is usually discarded. Water: 35 liters. Carbon: 20 kilograms. Ammonia: 4 liters. Lime: 1.5 kilograms. Phosphorus: 800 grams. Salt: 250 grams. Saltpeter: 100 grams. Sulfur: 80 grams. Fluorine: 7.5 grams. Iron: 5 grams. Silicon: 3 grams. Trace amounts of 15 other elements. Human soul, unknown. Individual spirit, unknown. At least the body was still breathing. Didn't need to worry about committing the greatest sin. Didn't need to transmute human flesh. Just needed the other two parts that combined to make an otherwise useless body into cloud. Stop. Back up. Water, 35 liters. All the other elements that composed a human body present and accounted for. Technically, said body was in perfect working order. The heart beat, the lungs breathed, core temperature was still 98.6 degrees Fahrenheit. There was no discoloration, putrefaction, or other signs of wasting, which meant that the IVs were doing their job of keeping the body fed and hydrated. The problem was that there was nothing inside, and Sephiroth didn't know what to do, was helpless in a way that he'd never been before, and just, he didn't know what to do. Stop. Breathe. Sephiroth set down yet another of his father's journals with forced patience. The way Hojo worked, he rarely put down the entirety of his experiments, only just enough to keep track of what happened and when, but never why, Never enough detail for someone to replicate those experiments. Paranoid bastard. And there were so many journals to go through, some dating back to the time before Sephiroth's birth, and who knew which one contained the line of research that had led Hojo to this point. Did a madman even need a straight progression of logic and careful analysis? It took monumental effort to tear himself away from Hojo's desk. If only he kept looking just a little longer, he might find the answer, however unlikely. And he paced restlessly back into the lab that adjoined the library, feeling his breath catch in his chest. Cloud lay so still on the table, so small and thin, with the IV tubes leading from the bends of his elbows, so unlike what he was when awake and moving and being his stubborn, quiet, loyal self. I need to move him. He shouldn't stay in this lab. It was the laboratory of a doctor more concerned with efficiency than compassion, all sharp edges and surgical steel. And even though Sephiroth had grown up in these surroundings, even he knew that it wasn't healthy, wasn't right. He sat on the edge of the table and ran a hand through the tips of Cloud's hair, unable to handle the firmer touch when he knew he wouldn't get a response. Sephiroth? He continued petting the edges of the spiky yellow hair silently, not looking up when Zack entered, still in full uniform. There was a long silence before the soldier said softly, "I convinced the brass that you're working on your annual assessment a bit ahead of schedule. Central Command should excuse your absence for a while." Sephiroth didn't respond. He heard the rustling and soft thud as Zack slipped the Buster Sword's harness off, leaning the weapon against the wall before walking over to put a hand on Sephiroth's shoulder. He didn't ask obvious questions of, "Did you find anything? What do you think is going on?" Just fixed his expression into the hard determination that had gotten him through the end of the Ishbal War. "We already know Hojo was trying to reach the gate, Sephiroth. It's a start. We'll figure out how to get Cloud back." He was a sacrifice. And for a moment, Sephiroth felt a fury that was rare, but when it came, it was black and vengeful and destructive. He was a sacrifice, and I don't... Stop. Before setting the world on fire started sounding like a brilliant idea. The grip Zack had on his shoulder tightened to something painful. Equivalent exchange. If we can figure out what Hojo might have gotten in return, we may be able to reverse the deal. Sephiroth made a disbelieving sound as he started stroking Cloud's hair once more. Cloud didn't wake up. Part 2. Ora et labora. Pray and work. Latin. A true alchemist does not work with only the physical. The mansion was like a cross between a museum and a crypt, its empty silence heavy and watchful. It made Zack's skin crawl, but given what secrets he discovered here, the damn place had always done that to him. It wasn't often that they could get Cloud to stay longer than a few hours. He was just a lowly specialist, and it wouldn't look good for a general to be seen too often with a young, fresh-faced soldier. But when they could, then the house would ring with startled laughter as Zack ambushed the kid, or with indignant cries whenever he fell into one of Zack's pranks. Zack had to take a moment to brace himself against the kitchen counter, ignoring the popping of the eggs cooking in the pan on the stove. Oh, God, Cloud. But he had to remind himself, as he had countless times already, to keep it together. Can't afford to lose it when Sephiroth was already on edge. It felt like a small betrayal to suddenly wish so fiercely for his old lover's help. Eris would know what to do. She always did. This one time, Zack and Sephiroth had gotten at each other's throats. Too much, "Why do you always have to act so immature?" and "Why can't you ever act like a normal person?" Cloud stood between them with his arms crossed, and when it nearly came to blows, he said, "You're both being stupid. If either of you acted like someone else, then you never would have started this relationship in the first place." Letting out a long breath, he flipped the eggs from the pan onto a plate, grabbed a mug of black coffee strong enough to scour the rust off iron, and set off for the spiral stairs that wound down into the basement lab. Things scuttled through the shadows lining the stairs and the long underground corridor, but Zack paid them no mind, and eventually kicked his way into the old library. "Zack," Cloud would say timidly, "Sephiroth's been down there for a long time. Has he eaten? I don't think he's eaten." And Zack would say, "Sometimes he gets like that. He can go for days without remembering to eat." And Cloud would furrow his brow and chew his lip. "That's not healthy. I'll go make some mashed potatoes. He likes those. Would you like any?" "Time to eat, Sephiroth." No reply. "You can't think if you don't eat." "I'm not hungry." "Neither am I, but some things just have to be done." "Sephiroth, if you don't eat, your mind really won't be able to function clearly, and then you're more likely to miss something that can help Cloud." Sephiroth slammed a book shut and put his head in his hands, leaning his elbows heavily on the oak desk. "Sometimes it feels like something's possessing me," he whispered, staring down at the embossed cover. "Like there's a voice telling me the answers are there if I can just find them." Zack set the plate and mug down on the desk, steering clear of the clutter of books and papers, and threaded a hand through the other's long hair. "It's guilt," he said quietly. "Probably a healthy dose of anxiety and self-doubt, too. Don't let it distract you." "No, you're right. As usual, you're right." Sephiroth sighed, sitting up again and closing his eyes. It was a moment of vulnerability that no one outside of Zack and Cloud had ever been allowed to see. "I can't afford to let my emotions cloud my..." "I meant it for your sake, too, you idiot." "I shouldn't have killed Hojo." "If you hadn't, I would have," Zack said with sudden fierceness. "He's the one that did this." Zack turned the desk chair and got to one knee so that he could look up into Sephiroth's face, a hand on each of the armrests trapping the other man in place. "This is Hojo we're talking about. Even if he had any idea how to reverse what he did to Cloud, do you honestly think he would have ever told you?" "Not everyone's stupid," Zack had told Cloud seriously. "Anyone with half an eye can see that there's something different about Sephiroth." And Cloud knew exactly what he meant. There was something a little too feline about the general's green eyes, a little too predatory in his bearing to be entirely human. But after a moment of thought, Cloud just shrugged. "Whatever Hojo may or may not have done, and remember, Zack, there's no proof of anything. It can't be reversed, and it's become so much a part of Sephiroth that what does it really matter? He's still human where it counts." And Zack had smiled so hard it hurt, because finally, finally, someone understood what Zack himself had been saying all this time. "Everyone has a breaking point." And Hojo was already so cracked that I really doubt we would have gotten anything useful out of him. He would have just sent you on a wild goose chase, Sephiroth, He would have told you whatever he had to, so you would get distracted from the actual problem. Then I would have gone as far as necessary to make him tell us the truth. He hissed, with such poison that Zach felt cold fear. Not of the man, but for him. Because that sort of darkness could eat a man alive. And God knew that Sephiroth had enough of that darkness as it was. Men, women, and children were dying, streaking the sand with blood. They didn't stand a chance under the stones that the mercury alchemist could form from the dust in the air, striking like a shower of falling stars. I was lucky, Sephiroth told Zach. I may have chosen to look them in the face as I killed them, but it's the flame alchemist I pity. Except that his voice had been utterly deadpan. He's the one that had to bear their screams as they burned. All right, here's the plan, the soldier said calmly. We're both going to eat, then we're going to sleep for a few hours, because you've been up for the last 26. No, don't argue with me. You know I'm right. Then we're going to sit down, and you're going to run me through the basics of what we do know. Maybe that'll help you figure out where to start. The struggle was visible on Sephiroth's face. Zach held his gaze, refusing to back down or look away. And finally, the general gave a short, jerky nod. As he pulled Sephiroth to his feet, Zach happened to glance at the state alchemist watch lying abandoned on the top of a book and couldn't help a troubled frown. Part 3. Circulation. Noun. A process of continued distillation used to evolve one's subject matter. It is not unusual to let a substance circulate for a month or longer. Apparently, the mercury alchemist has taken a leave of absence. Roy was so busy eyeing the stack of photos that had ominously appeared on the edge of his desk that it took him a moment to realize what Hughes was saying. General Sephiroth, why? A light shrug. Haven't been able to figure that out yet. Lieutenant Fair has been running around Central like a madman, which suggests that this sabbatical wasn't exactly planned. Roy leaned back in his chair and thoughtfully twirled a pen. Of the few generals that the military had, Sephiroth was the only state alchemist, and also the youngest, younger even than Roy. Whispers of conspiracy had followed him his entire career. His annual assessment? Except he wasn't scheduled to present anything for another several months. I'm thinking it has something to do with Hojo's death. The pen in Roy's fingers immediately stilled. That is unexpected. Not when you consider how many people hated the man, Hughes said dryly, then added more seriously. It was murder. The coroner claims it was a long blade, like a rapier, or the Masamune. Except no one's saying that little bit out loud. Sephiroth's got influence and not a little bit of worship from the people. General Sephiroth, a hero of the Ishbal War, whose popularity with the people was surpassed only by one, more charismatic, flame alchemist. And the Führer? Just smiles and says he looks forward to seeing whatever Sephiroth's come up with for this year's research. Of course, Roy muttered, glancing past Hughes towards the closed door of his office. He could hear the murmurs of his men and what sounded like Havok pleading with Hawkeye to put the gun down, please. It won't happen again. No, really. The question now becomes the next course of action, knowing that one of the generals has left Central. The others aren't exactly blind. Hakuro, for example, will be especially careful of anyone looking to take advantage of the situation, Roy pointed out. Not everyone, however, has me on their side. Hugh's smile had an edge of dark amusement. He took off his glasses and started cleaning them with the hem of his shirt. There's another bit of intrigue here, he said casually, and Roy arched a brow. One of the men in Sephiroth's unit has disappeared. A kid, really. He's only 16 or 17. Just a specialist. And? Well, there were some rumors not too long ago of inappropriate conduct. Although people couldn't seem to decide if the conduct was on the part of the general or the lieutenant. A few seemed to think it was all three. Maybe the kid and the general decided to elope. Ah, the romance of it. Love against all odds. Roy rolled his eyes, unimpressed. Such rumors were almost expected and were rarely taken seriously without real evidence. He'd overheard enough of them concerning himself and Fullmetal since the kid had first become a state alchemist. At 12 years old, no less. I know you're thinking that every commanding officer faces those accusations at one time or another. Mace, Roy broke in. What was it that earned Sephiroth his rank as state alchemist? Hughes blinked. I'm no alchemist, but from what I remember... And Hughes had a memory for details like no one else Roy knew, of course. He was trying to find a way to power crystal spheres with latent energy that could be used by anyone, even non-alchemists. You're thinking of Ed, aren't you? Roy started going through the papers on his desk, looking for the most recent intelligence concerning Fullmetal's whereabouts. If only the kid knew how right he was when he accused Roy of spying. If Sephiroth was using stones and crystals in his research, I imagine he would have been tempted by the true Philosopher's Stone at some point. Perhaps he'd know something that could help Fullmetal in his search. And if Ed, in his usual way, blundered into discovering what was going on, that would just be a coincidence. And if it just so happened to have something to do with getting you a little closer to the top, well, stranger things have happened. Indeed. Somewhere, halfway across Amstris, Ed sneezed. Part 4. Mercury of Air. The Mercury of Air is the active energy of the air element, i.e., the spirit of the intellect. Sephiroth was 16 years old when he stood in front of Central Command and presented his case to be a state alchemist. Metal is characterized by high electric and thermal conductivity and is possessed of an ordered structure. While also possessing an ordered structure, crystal lacks this conductivity unless impurities have been introduced. If given materials can be created to contain as well as conduct energy, it may be possible to store that energy for later use, independent of alchemical circles. And if this could be accomplished, then it may also be possible that those without alchemical skill can use the energy contained within said materia. Fascinating. True potential. But this is all speculative. What can you provide the military for immediate use? Condensation of the heavier elements in the air, reduction of air pollutants, particularly in coal mines, formation of defensive and offensive earthworks when circumstances prevent the usual alchemical methods. Be more specific. When floods have decimated or buried an area, airborne particles can be molded into walls, dams, and other boundaries just as reliably. Projectiles may also be formed, even from behind enemy lines. Like a meteor shower? If that is how you wish to describe it. He spoke without hesitation or fervor, only the calm of a person confident in their words. Führer Bradley had looked down at this teenage boy, silver-haired and black-clad, wearing an expression of cool blankness, and smiled. One more thing. Who is your sponsor? Professor Hojo, sir. He is my father. Well now, isn't that interesting? You will be the Mercury Alchemist. But the name, you see, was something of a cruel joke. On the surface, it may not seem so, given that there was already a Silver Alchemist, and Quicksilver would just get too confusing. However, Mercury, physical manifestation of spirit, the active energy binding together the passive energy of the soul and the receptive platform of the body. This theoretical materia could be the beginning of packaging and selling an otherwise sacred substance. Ah, the progressiveness of capitalism. It is also beautiful, and was once believed to be a miracle cure. In reality, it is highly lethal. And if the rumors about Hojo and Sephiroth's birth were correct, you could understand. Sephiroth wasn't a chimera or a homunculus. He wasn't that kind of abomination. But nevertheless, it made a terrible sort of sense. When he accepted the dragon-embossed pocket watch, Sephiroth understood precisely what the Führer was suggesting. Alchemist of Mercury. As he stood over Cloud's empty body, perhaps he would finally have the chance to live up to the name. Part 5. Philosophical Working. Noun. The alchemist believes that by understanding nature's laws and applying them with art, that it is possible to remove hindrances to the evolutionary wave so that energies of life can predominate and lift the subject towards perfection. They moved Cloud from the lab to one of the bedrooms on the first floor. It was a light, airy room, overlooking one of the overgrown gardens, where the IV stands and monitors didn't seem quite so unnatural. Sephiroth had carried him while Zack carefully balanced all the tubes and bags, trying to keep them from getting tangled or yanked from under Cloud's skin. Cloud had been stripped of his clothes, and then wrapped modestly in a sheet to make caring for his body easier. Zack now sat on the edge of the bed with Cloud's hand in his, absently stroking the skin with a thumb as Sephiroth paced around the room. Alchemy is based on the premise that there is a prima materia, Sephiroth murmured, and that this fundamental force naturally falls into duality, celestial salt and celestial nitre. Two sides of the same coin, Zack provided, and Sephiroth nodded his head distractedly. From this duality come the four classical elements, earth, fire, water, and air. But these aren't the elements we see in the real world. No, they're more than that. They're essences. They're foundations. And from these, we have the three essentials of salt, sulfur, and mercury. Body, soul, and spirit. These three are manifestations of the four elements, and thus the duality, and ultimately the prima materia. Like a pyramid. When Sephiroth shot him a look, Zack raised an eyebrow and said, "Non-alchemist here, I'm just calling it as I see it." The general snorted and resumed pacing. "We have Cloud's body, alive, which suggests that his spirit is still somehow connected to it. What's missing is his soul." "How do you know that it isn't the other way around?" "The soul is bound to the body through the spirit, like an animal at the end of a leash. If the spirit was missing, then by default the soul would be as well. No, if Cloud's body is still living, then the spirit is still there."
"So what can take someone's soul?"
Sephiroth turned sharply on his heel and prowled back across the room. Though his face was neutral, his gloved hands were curled into fists. "The gate," he said flatly. "Equivalent exchange demands that a price is paid for every transmutation. But the price of a soul is high. It would be connected to something as powerful and taboo as human transmutation."
Ojo never seemed like the type to pay much attention to taboo.
"No," Sephiroth hissed. "Alchemy was designed to have three stages. Separation, purification, and reunification. By putting a substance through this process, it would be evolved into a higher spiritual and physical vibration. Make it just that little bit closer towards perfection. I have little doubt that Hojo would have been enchanted by the idea of bringing men to that pinnacle. He always did have a certain disdain for the natural human condition." Judging from the tone of his voice, Zack had little doubt that if it was possible, Sephiroth would be slowly killing Hojo all over again.
"What do you mean?"
"Don't tell me you don't see it, Lieutenant," Sephiroth said coldly, stopping to turn and look at him with narrowed eyes. "I am a little too inhuman to be human. I've heard the whispers of soldiers debating which creatures Hojo used to create me, and I cannot blame them."
"Oh, shut up, Sephiroth," Zack growled. "You are who you are, soul and spirit, and yes, that particular body. I know it, Cloud knows it, and ours are the only opinions that really matter in this instance. Maybe Hojo tinkered with your genetics, but so what? I'm rather fond of that hair of yours. And even though he'd never admit it, I know for a fact that Cloud adores your eyes."
When Sephiroth opened his mouth to argue, Zack added, "So unless you're willing to question our intelligence, you'd better let this drop and just accept it." Sephiroth hissed again as he resumed pacing, cat-like. "Now, if I was trying to raise a person's vibration or whatever, what would that entail?" the soldier asked.
"Separation of the three essentials, their purification, and then recombining them. Theoretically, it would make a human more human, in essence, evolve them to the highest possible humanness."
"Very eloquent."
"It makes sense in Latin," Sephiroth returned, rather sulkily. "Or Greek, originally. Hojo often spoke of Genova."
"Who?"
Sephiroth waved a negligent hand.
"The name is a corruption of Jehovah, which itself is a corruption of what is thought to be the true name of God. Why Hojo chose that particular version, I have no idea. The man was usually exact in his methodology, so for him to not use the closest approximation of the original Tetragrammaton..."
Zack nodded and pretended he knew what the general was going on about.
"But it lends credence to the idea that Hojo was attempting human transmutation on... Cloud."
He paused.
particularly given the name that he chose for me. What? My name is the plural of the 10 aspects of God, Sephiroth explained. Zack knew him well enough to see the irritation at so much religious imagery, and at this point, Sephiroth was nearly talking to himself, as he paced around and around, long hair shifting in a somewhat distracting way. Well, more than just that, technically, given that the virtues all have unholy counterparts. But the point remains that, philosophically speaking, someone who managed to actualize all the virtues would attain godhood. As much as a human can, that is. Names are powerful, he said, suddenly switching topics. Matter, when reduced to less than its subatomic parts, becomes vibration, and thus is merely the intersection of said vibrations, which means that the potential power of sound, of words, cannot be underestimated. It makes a beautiful sort of sense. Names give form to otherwise abstract concepts, gives them definition. So it's possible that using Cloud's name, or perhaps the unique vibratory pattern that links his body and soul, would greatly increase our chances of success, especially as alchemy itself functions on more than just a material level in the first place, and so has some room for error in natural law. Then again, I may be confusing entirely separate concepts. Okay, said Zack. Despite the seriousness of the situation, he was having to suppress a smile. The circle that Hojo used was unfamiliar to me. And yes, the general had retreated so far into his musings that he'd completely forgotten the rest of the bedroom. Zack focused on the warmth he could feel from Cloud's hand, the steady pulse at the thin wrist, and the sight of Sephiroth in plain shirt sleeves and slacks rambling about metaphysics. And he used blood, which is powerful. Salt of the body, sulfur of the passions, mercury of the life force. But the theory is sound. He must have been in the second stage of the process when he was interrupted, and so the three essentials were separated, but not fully purified nor recombined. So we can't recombine them? No. Transmutation on this level? Human-animal chimera have been experimented with, but never something like this. This is an atrocity, pure and simple, a violation at every level of a person's existence. The alchemist is meant to evolve himself alongside his work as he masters his art, but this? Zack, this would be me reaching into the deepest layer of your being and molding it against what nature intended. Maybe, but the difference here, Zack said quietly, is that I would trust you to do it. Sephiroth stared at him as though he'd suddenly become a chimera himself, but Zack just smiled crookedly. I know none of us say them that often, but the words I love you aren't just a result of some mind-blowing orgasms, you know? If it were me in Cloud's position right now, I'd be standing around wherever he is and wondering what the hell was taking you so long. I know life has done a number on you, Sephiroth, but don't break on me now. After everything I've done, the general asked, you would trust me with something like this? Yes. Well, that was rather hard to argue with. All right. Yes. Part 6. Separation. Noun. Separation is the first step in evolving a substance. The three essentials are isolated and prepared for the second step, purification in turn. When Cloud woke up, he knew immediately that he wasn't in Amstress. Well, maybe that was a bit of a stretch, but he definitely wasn't in Central anymore. The air smelled cleaner, for one, not unlike the crispness of his remote mountain hometown. But there was an edge of dry hay. A farm? He could hear murmurs outside the closed door of the room. He wiggled a bit and realized he was lying naked between soft linen sheets, and dear God, how much did Zack give him to drink? His head was pounding, and everything felt sensitized, as though his skin had been scrubbed raw. He didn't recognize the bedroom. All off-white walls and red plaid curtains. It was possible this was just one of the many rooms scattered throughout Sephiroth's mansion that he'd never seen before, except that the previous owners of the place would sooner kill themselves than decorate like a bunch of peasants. Maybe that headache was making him a little more scrambled than usual. Cloud gingerly sat up, holding his head with one hand and glancing around. The window opened out onto a landscape of rolling green hills, and the breeze that came in was pleasantly warm from the morning sunlight, even though the light was enough to make him squint. He swung his legs out of bed and felt rough floorboards under his feet. Gathering the linen modestly around his waist, he padded barefoot towards the door and cautiously cracked it open, shivering in the sudden draft. Why was he feeling so sensitive? It was like his nerves were being overstimulated somehow. But he was mostly sure that Zack wouldn't have given him some kind of happy pill. "Hello?" he called tentatively. The murmurs had been coming from downstairs, he realized, and they stopped before someone started coming up. Cloud was about to say, "Zack, what the hell just happened?" But the person was a teenage girl with a soft smile and bobbed brown hair. He blinked. "You're awake," she said. Cloud winced, her words sounding loud. "We were worried. The nearest town with a doctor is an hour away. Except it just looked like you bumped your head. How are you feeling?" He replied. "Where am I?" "This is the Chocobo Farm. I'm Chloe. What's your name?"
Cloud. How did I get here?"
"We were hoping you could tell us that." She looked puzzled and a little worried. "You showed up on our doorstep without any clothes, you know." "Oh, here." She held out a pile of neatly folded clothes. "I'm not sure if they'll fit, but you'll have to make do with some of Billy's clothes. Why don't you get dressed, then come downstairs and have some coffee? We'll see if we can't figure out what happened and how to get you home." Cloud was left standing at the top of the stairs, holding up a sheet with one hand and borrowed clothes in the other.
"Okay.
Zack must have really done a number on him. And why didn't Sephiroth stop him? The general was usually pretty good at making sure Zack didn't go too far." Cloud shrugged prosaically and got dressed back in the bedroom, skin crawling a little at the chafing. He was rather miffed to find that the clothes were too loose around the waist and a little too long. And was it Cloud's fault that he'd inherited his mother's height? The first person to crack a short blonde joke was going to get his balls introduced to Cloud's foot. Chloe, thankfully, had included a wide leather belt, and he tightened it around the denim trousers before rolling up the sleeves of the white button-down shirt. He paused while working on the third-to-last button, startled. Over his heart was a blood-red mark, like a hexagram with an extra horizontal line through its center. When he ran a finger over it, it felt as smooth and unremarkable as an old tattoo. Not at all like the result of a wild, drunken night on the town with his superior officers. Seriously, what the hell had happened? Hojo, standing over him with a twisted smile. For a moment, he was paralyzed with terror. But then time started again, and he took a heaving, shaky breath. Get it together, Strife. Plenty of time to panic later. The stairs opened out in a true farm kitchen, with a scrubbed oak table and a large oven for baking bread. And for a moment, Cloud felt a sharp pang of homesickness. Chloe was busy with a coffee pot on the stove, just like his mom before she died. And two people, the younger of whom must be Billy, were sitting at the table, chatting over steaming mugs.
"Hello, Cloud," said the older man. "I'm John, and this is Billy. So what brings you to our little corner of the world?"
"I'm not sure," he said quietly, pulling out a chair and smiling at Chloe as she set a mug in front of him. "Last I remember, I was in Central." The circles and symbols were traced on the floor in blood, his own blood, and he couldn't move. It felt like every muscle had been paralyzed and only his mind was awake and screaming. "Cloud, you all right?" asked Billy, and Cloud managed another weak smile. Under the edge of the table, he picked uneasily at the shirt cuffs.
Yeah, I'm fine. Just, confused. How far is Central from here?"
"I don't know," said John. "What Central?"
Did he really just ask that? Cloud thought, bemused.
"You know, the capital of Amstris?"
He got three blank looks in return, and dread was starting to grow in his belly.
"Is that a city? The closest big city is Midgar, and that's some 100 miles away. There's Junon, too, a couple of hours south of here."
"Maybe I'm in Drachma?" In which case, he was really screwed. But Nibelheim had been on the border of Amstris and Drachma, resulting in an odd mix of cultures. So if these cities were as big as the old man was suggesting, then he should have heard of them before. And the question remained, how did he get here from Hojo's lab? Better not think about that right now. Focus on the present. These people wouldn't appreciate it if you started screaming. And why the hell had he been naked? It must have been something Hojo was doing. But Cloud wasn't an alchemist. He only understood the basics, and he'd only practiced whenever no one else was around. He never heard of alchemical transportation. The energy that would be required to shift the mass of a human form from one place to another instantaneously would be insane. Like, supernova insane. Unless the Philosopher's Stone? He thought of the rumors about the Ishbal Civil War, about Amstrian alchemists wearing small blood-red stones, imperfect ones, but nevertheless closer to the great work than any other time in history.
"Have you heard of alchemy?" Cloud asked slowly, and the dread turned hard and cold when all three shook their heads.
"What's that?"
"It's the scientific study of natural and spiritual law. Alchemists can manipulate those laws."
"Sounds like magic to me," Billy declared, and Cloud couldn't help a wry smile. If only Sephiroth had been around to hear that.
"This is all very interesting," said John, "but we've got to figure out what we're going to do with you."
"He could stay here," Chloe chimed in. "We could always use another set of hands around the stables."
"Yeah, the Chikobos are getting to be racing age, you know, and they're always a handful then," added Billy.
John frowned. "Now, don't you two be getting ahead of yourselves. This is Cloud's decision."
Feeling rather overwhelmed, he asked, "Do you have a world map?"
"Aye, we do. Though I don't know what you'd be wanting with a world map."
John lumbered up and disappeared into what was presumably a living room, returning shortly with a worn, folded map in hand. He spread it out on the table and jabbed what looked like nothing but green plains covering half a continent.
"We're hereabouts. Midgar's over here, and here's Junon. Where did you say you were from?"
"Amstris,"
All four peered at the map for several minutes before Billy announced, "I don't see an Amstrus anywhere. Maybe it's too small to show up on this?"
"But it's Amstrus."
"What about Drachma?"
"Sounds like a northern name." John pointed to the western continent. "Nope, don't see it."
Cloud didn't see it either, but he couldn't miss Nibelheim. His eyes widened. "How do I get there?"
"Nibelheim? I think I've heard of it. It's a reactor town, if I remember right. I guess you'd take a ship from Midgar to Costa del Sol and pray you find someone to take you over all those mountains."
Cloud stared at the map and its unfamiliar landforms. Continents where there should have been oceans. Empty stretches of land where cities should be flourishing. Where Nibelheim apparently hadn't been burned to the ground by Drachman terrorists. Where there were no rumors of war because Amstrus and Drachma didn't seem to exist. Where Ishbal hadn't become a genocide. Where Jing wasn't struggling with its own internal politics.
"Where am I?"
Part 7. Fire. Noun. Fire is the highest of the four essential elements. The rarefied air closest to the lunar gate of the heavens. It is the element of the soul, ambition, and power. The polished marble and swept cobblestone of Central shone in the noon sunlight as brightly as if it had just been built. The grand steps in front of Central Command were lined with soldiers that led up to the dais, where the white dragon of Amstrus flew on a silk banner. Uniforms were crisp, boots polished, hair slicked or pinned back, and all Sephiroth could feel was disgust. He'd already had the ceremony formalizing his new rank, so he stood with the other generals, ranging on the right side of the Führer. This was to honor the heroes of the war, the brave men and women that had distinguished themselves in defending the life and liberty of Amstrus. Never mind that thousands of other Amstrian men and women had been killed in rage and terror and mindless violence. Never mind that an entire people had been slaughtered. But people must suffer for others to shine. People may have died, but others demonstrated the valor and strength that they wouldn't have otherwise. So said the Führer, after Sephiroth pointed out those little details. The needs of the many must outweigh the needs of the few, General. These ideas of individualism undermine the functionality of the society.
But surely compassion...
Is there something in particular you have in mind, General? The Führer had asked. And though the man had been smiling, there was something that made Sephiroth's skin crawl. So he replied,
No, I'm merely disconcerted by being back in the city after the front lines.
And the Führer clapped him on the back and said, Understandable, Sephiroth. Entirely understandable. The sunlight was hot against the dark blue wool of his uniform. Sephiroth watched as each name was called, followed by a short rendition of the national anthem as the man or woman shook hands with the Führer and the generals, and each person seemed to be either dazed or flushed with excitement. "I fought for my country, and my country is honoring that," they were no doubt thinking. Except Sephiroth wanted to say, "No, not this time. This is just Bradley's politics and Bradley's schemes and Bradley's lies." It took him a moment to realize that the Führer's good eye was narrowed ever so slightly. He followed Bradley's line of sight to the soldier next in line to be called. The Flame Alchemist, Roy Mustang. Mustang walked up the long steps with casual grace, as calm as the Fuhrer himself.
For outstanding courage, began the Fuhrer, but Sephiroth was more interested in Mustang's expression. He was attentive, but there was none of the thrill that was in the other soldiers. No anxiety, no awe at being face to face with the Fuhrer and his generals. Just resolve, or perhaps determination. And obviously Bradley sees it. Newly promoted to colonel, two ranks higher than when he'd been sent out to Ishbal, and with ribbons of campaign and service, Mustang held himself still as General Raven pinned the silver dragon emblem onto his lapel. He shook hands with the generals. Each general said something along the lines of, "Congratulations, you're an asset to our nation. You have a bright future ahead of you." But when Sephiroth took his hand, he said softly, "Thank you for saving the people that you could. It was an honor to serve with you." Dark almond eyes widened briefly before Mustang could help himself, and then he smiled wryly, a little bitterly. "Thank you, General." His grip was firm, his spine straight, his expression as calm as a pool of water. Sephiroth had no ambition of his own, could care less about promotion. But that didn't mean he was above the battlefield of politics. "I wonder what changes this Mustang is determined to make." One of the last people Roy expected to see in the officer's bar was General Sephiroth. The man sat alone at the end of the counter, given a wide berth by the other patrons, and surprisingly free of Lieutenant Fair's company. Making a snap decision, Roy casually strode over and took the seat beside Sephiroth. He couldn't deny that the general was intimidating, aloof and watchful, tall and renowned for both his alchemical and physical prowess. Even now he wore his gloves, black with a stitched white array that had some sort of basis in both air and earth. But since Roy rarely took off his own, he couldn't really criticize. "Good evening, General," he said, motioning for a drink. The barkeep slid over a glass of whiskey. There was a pause. "Good evening, Colonel." A companionable silence passed as each took a sip of their respective drink. "How are your men?" Sephiroth asked. "They're well. I can honestly say that I'm lucky to have been assigned the people I have." "I've heard that you have recently taken a 12-year-old boy under your command."
"Indeed," Roy replied smoothly, mind racing through all the possible things that the general might be thinking.
"Fullmetal is considered a genius in alchemy."
From the corner of his eye, he saw a rueful smile flicker over Sephiroth's face.
"He'll have quite a time in the military, but I imagine that you will do your best to ease his way."
"Hoping to manipulate Fullmetal somehow?" The boy was hardly discreet in his talent, after all. And if anyone could manage to control him, then he would be controlling an effective weapon.
"Suspicion of sexual abuse?"
"Inevitable, when such a young child was taken into service."
"Public face?"
No doubt Sephiroth knew the newspapers would eat up the story of a poor lost boy being guided by the benevolent military. This wouldn't be the first time that Roy had had to face other officers eyeing who they thought was an impressionable young genius.
"Relax, Colonel," said Sephiroth, his normally flat voice tinged with amusement. "It was idle curiosity, nothing more."
"I never thought otherwise."
Friendly tone, sip of whiskey, discreet attention to the general's body language and words.
"Sephiroth's a bit of an odd duck," Hughes had told him. "He's got some eyes and ears and intelligence, and you wouldn't believe how long it took me to figure out it was Tang. It's embarrassing.
But there's no indication of him abusing his power. No cover-up, no scandal. The only vaguely unusual thing was his demand to the Fuhrer himself that Lieutenant Fair be transferred to his command after the war."
Sephiroth leaned on his elbow and looked at Roy from the corner of his eyes, so green they almost seemed to glow in the dim light of the bar. As a wise man once told me, General, men like us carry the weight of the world's sins so that others may remain innocent, Roy said softly. And that was the crux of the matter, wasn't it? In Risenbul, Roy had seen a child with the eyes of a soldier, and there was something wrong with that, as though all his sacrifices during the Ishbal War had been for nothing. Of course, there was ambition and a kind of weapons acquisition in having the Fullmetal Alchemist under his command, and, by his extension, his just-as-genius brother. But Roy could admit to himself with brutal honesty that there was also an element of redemption. Without taking his gaze off Roy, Sephiroth idly swirled the whiskey in his own glass and murmured, "Few people are able to shoulder such responsibility and not break beneath it. It is important, therefore, to support those few for the sake of the innocent." Then Sephiroth drained his glass, dropped some sends on the counter, and stood up with a half-smile. "I always come away from your company with something to think about, Colonel. Have a good night." He swept out of the bar and left Roy staring down into his drink, wondering what the hell he was supposed to think about potentially having the support of a man like Sephiroth. Part 8. Oil of Silver. The extracted sulfur of silver is efficacious for disorders of the brain, memory, and emotions, particularly for depression and emotional trauma. Cloud wasn't a stranger to nightmares. They'd become a common occurrence these last 2 years, and while that didn't make them any easier to bear, he'd learned to face them with quiet resignation. Nor was he the type to sit up straight in bed, a scream in his throat, or the type to flail and cry out. No, when he woke from a nightmare, it was like a slime of horror was sliding off his face, turning the transition from sleep to awareness a surreal experience. The hitching of breath followed almost immediately, and sometimes tears, but not so often anymore. And he turned onto his side to press his face into the pillow and to breathe out the grief that tightened his chest. There was nothing dramatic, never a sound louder than a gasp or a harsh exhale, as though his mind was still trapped in the border between shock and horror. But this was the first time he'd had a nightmare during one of the rare occasions in which he was able to share a bed overnight with Sephiroth and Zack. He clawed his way away from fire and screams to wakefulness, staring for a long moment at the ceiling and trying to breathe through the tightness in his chest, before turning over to curl into a tight ball as though collapsing in upon himself. "Cloud?" The hand on his shoulder made him twitch sharply, making Sephiroth immediately withdraw. He tried to open his mouth to speak, to say, "I'm fine, sorry to wake you." Except he couldn't find the words over the adrenaline and sorrow burrowing their way through his veins like living things. He must have made some sound in his sleep and triggered those soldier reflexes in the general. But it wasn't like Cloud would know. He'd never had someone beside him like this. "Cloud," Sephiroth whispered again, shifting to slowly slide a hand back onto Cloud's shoulder and down his arm. On Sephiroth's other side, Zack made a sleepy, grumbling sound. "I'm sorry," he whispered back shakily, keeping his face in the pillow because, God, he was a mess.
It's all right. I didn't mean to wake you.
You don't have to apologize.
Sephiroth leaned forward slightly, his long hair sliding forward across Cloud's bare torso.
Nightmare?
It's nothing, really. God damn it, his voice was still cracking slightly. He sat up, managing a smile that felt horribly fake on his own face, but unable to meet the man's eyes. I slept a lot yesterday, anyway. I guess it carried over tonight. Go back to sleep, okay? I'm just gonna make some coffee and do some reading.
Cloud.
He slid out of bed, blushing to realize that he was still naked, as he snatched up his trousers and slipped them on. He flashed another one of those fake smiles and escaped the bedroom, shoving his hands into his pockets when he realized they were shaking. Once in the kitchen, lit by the glow of the small lamp Sephiroth habitually kept burning at night, he stood in the middle and stared sightlessly out the window, overlooking a lawn turned silver in the moonlight. The clock said it was only 4:30. Had to be back at the academy at 8 for morning drills. He should really use the time to do the reading for his tactics class. Hadn't exactly had time last night when his clothes were stripped off of him, and he'd been pushed onto the bed, on his hands and knees with Zack in his mouth and Sephiroth fucking him from behind. Probably had bruises on his hips by now. Throat still felt a little raw, but that was his own fault, really. Hadn't been able to resist teasing and sucking until Zack was all but senseless and uncontrolled. Cloud wrapped his arms around himself and suddenly felt very alone, overwhelmed. What was he doing? He was fucking two superior officers and couldn't even stop being such a wimp. It had all happened 2 years ago and he'd survived, hadn't he? Wasn't supposed to be crying in the middle of the night like a scared little kid. Who was he kidding? He was just a teenager with absolutely no idea what he was doing or what he was supposed to do. As soon as Sephiroth and Zack realized he wasn't worth the time and was just a stand-in until they realized they loved each other best, he wasn't going to have anything but to go through the motions of the military. He jumped again as Sephiroth's arms slid around his waist, who had to bend over slightly to accommodate the difference in their heights. A sharp chin rested lightly on the top of his head as a broad, warm body pressed itself against his back. Cloud held his breath, waiting for the questions. Zack would have pressed. He was the type to drag everything out into the open, like squeezing the pus from a flesh wound. But the silence stretched on, save for the steady ticking of the clock by the doorway. He hardly noticed when he started leaning back into the steady warmth, withdrawing into the circle of Sephiroth's arms as though he were wrapping himself up in a blanket and hiding from the rest of the world. After a little while, he felt Sephiroth start to stand back, but before he could turn around, the other man was draping Zack's military jacket over his shoulders. He could tell. It smelled like that weirdly fruity and totally not girly aftershave that apparently reminded him of his jungle hometown. And moving towards the coffee pot on the counter. Unsure and still feeling a little distant from the real world, Cloud shifted awkwardly, watching from under his bangs. Sephiroth was getting out two mugs, milk and sugar, as the coffee percolated. Then he filled both cups, adding just the right proportions of milk and sugar to the one that he finally handed to Cloud. Cloud hesitated, searching his face for any clue of how he was expected to respond. But all he found was calm and something soft, something that made him blush without knowing why. When he took the mug, Sephiroth wordlessly guided him towards the living room, sitting on the sofa and pulling Cloud down to stretch out on the cushions with his side pressed against the general's arm. Cloud glanced sideways at Sephiroth again, but the man was just sipping and watching the faint glow of the embers in the fireplace. Slowly, Cloud relaxed, taking a sip of his own coffee and feeling its warmth pool in his belly to spread through his limbs. Zack's too large jacket was still around his shoulders like a fitted quilt. He was warm, but not from the heat of an inferno. It was quiet and still, and maybe he could finally breathe again. When the alarm went off at 7, Zack padded out in his boxers to the living room. He found Sephiroth dozing with his chin tipped forward onto his chest, and Cloud fast asleep with his head in Sephiroth's lap. Zack's own jacket pulled tight around him. Two half-empty mugs sat on the side table, suggesting that Sephiroth had had the foresight to set them aside before either of them had conked out. Zack smiled ruefully. It looked like it'd been the right choice to let Sephiroth win the brief debate earlier about who was going to follow Cloud out of the bedroom. He weighed the pros and cons of letting them sleep and be late for work or the academy. But when he saw the shadows under Cloud's eyes, he decided it wouldn't be too difficult to bullshit a pardon for the cadet's absence that day. Sephiroth was debating with himself the merits of having General Hakuro assassinated when the door of his office abruptly opened. Zack wandered in with an open folder in his hands, kicking the door closed behind him and flopping down onto the leather couch. He didn't look up once. "So it seems that Cloud is from this place called Nibelheim," Zack began without preamble, not noticing the mix of annoyance and exasperation on his superior's face. "Tiny town in butt-fuck-nowhere near the Drachman border." "And?" Sephiroth asked dryly, setting aside his paperwork. It wasn't like he could turn it in, given the doodles of stick figures with nooses around their necks. "Turns out that 2 years ago, the whole place burned to the ground. There's a note in Cloud's file saying he was the only survivor." And suddenly, things were a lot less entertaining. "He would have been 14, Sephiroth said quietly. "Yeah," Zack finally looked up, wearing a cynical expression. "No wonder he joined the military so young. Looks like he went to Briggs not long after and got transferred here. Medical records say he's got some social anxiety and a tendency towards depression. But having something like that on top of being a teenage kid? Shit!" There was a moment of silence. Sephiroth used it to absorb this information, fitting it in with what he knew of the boy. He remembered the night a few weeks ago when Cloud had been driven from bed, and here was the likeliest reason. "What was the date?"
August 11th, 1912.
"Oh shit, that's his fucking birthday!"
"Of course it was." "When did he show up at Briggs?"
"About a month later, it looks like."
"Does it say where he was in the interim?"
"Nope." A 14-year-old tragedy survivor on his own for a month. That actually explained some things. Sephiroth leaned forward on his elbows and pinched the bridge of his nose with a gloved hand. What was one supposed to say to something like that? "Gee, that sucks."
Zack unknowingly echoed his thoughts with,
"So what do we do?"
"I don't know," he admitted, then glanced down at the folder in Zack's hands. "You do realize you're violating Cloud's privacy, right?"
The soldier frowned at it. "Normally I'd agree with you, but something's weird here. It's usually not that hard to get a cadet's file if you really want to. But I had to go all the way to Tsang for this one."
Now Sephiroth frowned.
"I know, right? Apparently he's been tagged somehow, but I can't figure out why. And I wasn't about to get intelligence involved with Cloud, especially with no real evidence of anything. Hey man, don't have to look at me twice like that. I'm worried too."
"Was there any cause listed for that fire?"
"Just the usual blame on the lack of resources in little towns. Someone's fireplace gets out of control, not enough people or whatever to stop it in time, yada yada. Which, okay, I know small towns too, and that's not really out of the ballpark, but still."
"Zack, are you sure you're not looking for something that isn't there?"
"Sephiroth, since when has there not been a conspiracy in this government?"
All right, you may have a point there, but my own still stands. Are you looking for a conspiracy specifically because this is about Cloud?
Do I need another reason?
The thing about Zack was that he could make things seem so reasonable. You do realize that we can't use military resources to look into this matter, right? It could bring accusations of favoritism, slanderous rumors. Given Cloud's age and adolescent attractiveness, endanger the three of them if there really was conspiracy and the higher-ups found out about their prying.
Yes, thank you, I do know. Don't worry, I'll keep it on the down low.
Might ask Tsang to do a bit of snooping, since he already knows about this damn file.
I bet he gets bored anyway, now that Rufus Shinra's trying to take over Parliament, that vicious little snake,
he said lightly. And here I thought Tsang had his hands full with Lieutenant Colonel Hughes.
You ask me, those two were the town housewife gossips in a previous life.
I'll be sure to let him know.
Wait, I didn't mean it!
The end.
If you enjoyed this podfic, please leave feedback, both for myself and for the author. You can find this podfic at archiveofourown.org/users/opalsong. Thanks for listening!